what we really focus on and evangelize is there's no sustainability without profitability. So if these farmers and ranchers cannot make farming and ranching and their operations profitable, that land will sell and it will be subdivided and it will be developed.
Yep.
And I don't know about you guys, I've never seen a subdivision get torn down and turned back into habitat working land.
That's right. It's true.
There's an old adage, buy land, they're not making any more of it. And yet if you have land, keeping a hold of it can be a tricky game. Farmers and ranchers who do some of our most valuable and important work don't have an easy road making a living, let alone making ends meet. Enter the gig economy. Leveraging that idea that maybe what we already have is enough if we can find new ways of sharing it. On this episode of Roadcast, we caught a little rain and a fascinating conversation with Nick DeCastro of LandTrust. LandTrust is the world's largest recreation access network. They partner with farmers, ranchers, and other landowners to help them simply and safely generate income from their land's recreational value. Believing it's a win-win situation for the landowner and the outdoor enthusiast when rural and working land remains undeveloped, LandTrust believes the future of working lands is dependent on a portfolio of income from agricultural production, conservation, and recreation opportunities. Seems like a potential solution for all parties involved. And if there's anything we need more of these days, it's that kind of thinking. Kudos to Nick and his team. Cheers, and we'll see you down the road. Nick, thanks for joining us on Roadcast.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me out.
Yeah, it's good to be in Montana. We can't see much.
Yeah, I know. This is, I told you guys, there's smoke everywhere.
I know.
You can barely see the mountains right here that are half a mile away. It's unfortunate.
Not exactly the big sky.
No.
We had in mind when we were thinking about
it. Yeah, it's more like San Francisco Bay, you know, socked
like
in fog.
It does feel like it's fogged in. Maybe talk about what LandTrust does.
Sure.
And like the origins of how you came to the idea.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I moved up here to Bozeman in 2016, you know, I wanted to be closer to things I'm passionate about. You can always catch a flight to New York City or somewhere else if you want to go see friends or do business or whatever, but I'd rather live close to the things that I'm passionate about and pop out to go take care of business rather than the reverse.
Yeah.
Because as you know, making time for the things you're passionate about usually gets put to the side or pushed
off. Yeah,
totally. So, coming up here, I found myself, you know, like getting a lot back into hunting and fishing, and we have tons of public land up here, which is awesome. But naturally, I don't know if you guys hunt or fish or recreate, but a lot of the times you find yourself wanting to get access to, you know, private lands to go do those things.
Gotcha.
For a myriad of reasons, often better biodiversity, better, you know, more wildlife, less pressure from the public. This last year was an insane amount of people on public lands.
Yeah.
And it's great that people are getting outside, you know, of course, but if you're trying to have a little piece of time to yourself, it's not as great.
Yeah.
So that was the impetus for it. I was like, hey, I'm a willing participant on the demand side here. Like, I'd be happy to pay that farmer or rancher for the opportunity to go out and fish or hunt or do whatever on their land. There's no way to do it. They don't love door knocking. They're busy people running a business. So that's what was the impetus for this. I was very early on in the Airbnb platform in New York City when I lived there. And so I in 2011, 2012, I saw the power of like the sharing economy. So it was a clear marketplace thing for us to try. And so that's how the business started. It's evolved a lot since then. I started it in 2019. But that's how it originally got started. And it was really focused on hunting to get going.
Yeah.
And it's since then, it's kind of grown to just generalize outdoor recreation and agritourism.
Yeah.
So the idea being that the future working lands is going to require stacked enterprises. It's going to require a portfolio of income. Just cattle, just corn, just grain is not going to pay for things. And so, you know, doing production agriculture plus recreation plus conservation income opportunities, that portfolio is what we believe is going to make up passing things generationally from here.
Yeah, it's interesting. Two things. I'd love for you to like just talk a little bit more about this conservation.
Sure.
And what was the language there? Conservation.
So you mean the portfolio?
Yeah.
Yeah. So ag production, of course.
Yeah.
What they do today, recreation and conservation.
Yeah. How was like what is when you say conservation? What are you talking about
there? Yeah. So there's really interesting opportunities. So if you think about what is land's recreation value derived from? Well, it's derived from its habitat and wildlife.
Yeah.
So you could have a million acre ranch, and if it's just dirt, I mean, other than maybe motorcycling or something, it doesn't really have a lot of recreation value. So the interesting thing is when you put the free market to work and you put the incentive for the landowner, the profit incentive on recreation, you start to open that market to them. It naturally incentivizes investing in the asset that's, you know, gaining them money.
Yeah.
So in the Airbnb example, early on, you know, if you started making money from letting someone sleep in your loft above your garage, you're like, wow, I'm making some money from this. Maybe we put high-speed internet, maybe put a big TV in there,
gotcha.
We could put a jacuzzi in the backyard, whatever, make more money.
Yeah.
Well, that's the market at work. So in our marketplace, we're based on not lodging, but land and habitat.
Yeah.
And so when farmers and ranchers start generating significant income from recreation, they're like, wow, we should invest more into that asset because it's making me money.
Mm-hmm.
And so investing in that asset is investing in habitat.
Gotcha.
You know, so that's, and so it's inextricably linked to conservation.
Gotcha.
But we're using the market to do it.
Love
rather
it.
Than just, you know, the nonprofits are great and the government tries their hand at this. And I see this world as a three-legged stool. Like the government plays a part, nonprofits play a part, but for-profit is always going to draw the greatest scale.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of opportunities to incentivize through the free markets, you know, conservation regenerative practices. But not asking them to do it because it makes
it's
you feel
great.
Good.
Absolutely.
Do it because it makes you money.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
Which is great. I love that model.
And the one thing that we evangelize too is there's a lot of people talking about sustainability today.
Yeah.
And, you know, my cynical perspective is when you see megacorps talking about this, it's for corporate social responsibility and like it's a cool press piece. But what we really focus on and evangelize is there's no sustainability without profitability. So if these farmers and ranchers cannot make farming and ranching and their operations profitable, that land will sell and it will be subdivided and it will be developed.
Yep.
And I don't know about you guys. I've never seen a subdivision get torn down and turned back into habitat working
lands. It's true.
So it's, you know, profit is the way. It's not this, you know, this bad word. And I think it's rare when you... historically, profit and conservation weren't two words you saw in sentences together often.
Yeah.
But we think it's the key.
I love that. Yeah, you can start to see this larger runway for this thing to take off that hits all the buttons. Conservation, recreation.
Income, you know, profitability.
All of that kind of stuff.
Yep.
For folks that maybe like in the design world that have an immediate reaction to hunting.
Sure.
I know that you've probably thought a lot about hunting. You're a hunter yourself.
Yep.
Maybe just unpack kind of the connection between... the hunter's role, how a lot of hunters see themselves in terms of land and like, you know,
there's a company that we were just talking about, Meat Eater here, who people who have seen on Netflix, I'm sure. And they've done a very good job at evangelizing, you know, hunting and what that role is in society. And, you know, it's kind of the original role. We're all here because someone in our lineage was able to hunt and kill and eat things.
Yeah.
And I think it still plays a really crucial role today. One, I think it keeps us in touch with actual nature and the cycle of life in a very visceral way.
Yes, like this thing was alive.
It was alive. I just killed it, and I'm going to turn it into food.
Mm-hmm.
And there's weight that goes along with that.
Yeah.
Which I believe is a really important thing for many reasons to really understand that process. It's not just something in a plastic package at the store shelf. Like, that was an animal, you know.
That was an animal.
It was an animal. It was killed so that we can, you know, everything, you know, things die so other things can live. So, and, you know, from a design perspective, we have a really great product lead. And the design challenges that Land Trust presents are really interesting.
Yeah. I'd love to have you unpack some of them.
So, you know, from a platform perspective, when you look at lodging companies, so Airbnb is a lodging company, HipCamp's a lodging company, they all compete in lodging, which there's a myriad competitors for.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone in the lodging business multi-platforms.
Mm.
So, you know, a host on Airbnb, you're going to find their place on Airbnb. Now I think Kayak is doing vacation.
There's no
unique inventory on the supply side in the vacation rental place. And then you're also competing against sleeping on your friend's couch. You're competing against a hotel room.
Yeah.
It's a very packed market. We consider ourselves a recreation access network.
Mm.
And our supply is all about the land. If there's lodging, cool. But when you start to look at it from a design perspective, a lodging company has a very easy supply-demand matching thing to solve for from a product perspective. I have a room available this date for this price, and you are interested in that match.
Yeah.
as we roll out more and more of our outdoor recreation activities and agritourism activities, now one supply could come live on our, so one ranch could come live on our platform, but they could have six or seven types of activities to be offered.
Experiences.
And so guiding a consumer, you know, a prospective recreator or guest through that process is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I told Cody, one, we're designing on the farm and ranch side for, you know, folks who are not in the Bay Area using 27 apps on their phone every day to mm-hmm. order food. Right. So this is not that. So you have to make sure you have dead simple design.
Yeah.
And then on the, you know, the customer journey from, oh, I heard about this land trust thing, to booking something is also much more complex than a simple lodging play.
Yeah, yeah.
Farmers and ranchers, they're people who build a network of trust, and a lot of times they're multi-generational, and a lot mm-hmm. of these folks have done business with each other without a contract for 30 years.
Totally.
And so it's extremely this, like, trust-oriented.
Tech company, yeah, interesting.
Correct. We do not call ourselves a tech company. You know, we provide a service.
Yeah.
Now, of course, it's facilitated by a technology platform, but you won't get very far talking like, we're a tech company.
Oh, yeah, I believe it.
No, hey, we're a service. We're a business partner
that
you can partner with to tap into this recreation income opportunity.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. You know, by partnering with us, they're allowing us to come into their legacy, multi-generation. So this is a legacy thing. It's often where they live. It's their most valuable asset. So everyone else that approaches them often asks them to trade away control. So when the government comes and says, hey,
oh, yeah, I want to put power lines or whatever.
Yeah, or like a CRP, Conservation Reserve Program, is a thing that the U.S. government does. And essentially they pay landowners, farmers or ranchers, to primarily farmers, to not farm certain ground for conservation purposes. So like, hey, don't put it in row crop, like leave it here and just kind of let it go. And that'll be X amount of years, and they'll give them some money to do that. But the thing is they're trading, they're selling control of their land away. And although like it's a thing that people do because they need to make money, it's still not ideal because they're selling away control.
That makes sense. Yep. That's what they're concerned
about. So what we come to them with is maintain 100% control and now have access to a new market. You can list whatever you'd like to list for whatever price you want, for whatever dates you want, whatever, it's whatever rules you want. It's your place.
You get to control it,
So that has been what's enabled us to really scale, because everyone else that knocks on the door in nonprofits, hey, let's trade some of your control. Don't do this practice. That's control of your land, you know, without really any incentive to do so other than like, hey, we think it's a good thing to do. You know, like, okay, we might not disagree with you, but we have to make money.
Yeah, that's
interesting. You know, again, if an operation cannot be profitable, it will sell. And eventually when it gets sold, it will be developed.
Gotcha.
You know, and is that a win for conservation? We're in what was a farm right here. You know, like most of Bozeman is
farmland.
The subdivision that I live in on Google when I first moved in was farm ground. Like when you looked at it on Google, it was farm ground. So there's always a tension between development and, you know, and progress and growth from an economic perspective. And then, you know, I think it's much better for conservation purposes for our working lands to be there instead of blacktop.
Yeah. Well, thanks for spending time with us.
Yeah.
It was
great.
I
appreciate you guys having us.
Yeah, it's good to hear what Land Trust is doing. Where can people find what you're doing and, like, follow along? And
yeah, landtrust.com. We'll have all the socials in the footer.
Yeah, totally.
I don't participate in social, so... I used to work in that world, and I saw how the sausage was made. So I haven't had social media since like 2015 or 16 or something like that. But yeah, all the socials are down there, and like, please do, you know, follow us. Social media is a necessary thing for
necessary
business.
Necessary
evil. Yeah, totally. I mean, I think it's, there's another conversation, but
well, no, it is, because you really could go down that rabbit hole. It's a growing sentiment of just like people longing for analog natural experiences.
Yes.
You know, and just like, I'm so sick of the algorithm or whatever it is, just stuffing stuff in my face. And
Let me get outside. Let me do something that I could put that stuff away.
Yeah. Put that stuff away and get lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sitting in a blind.
So you can get connected to us to get disconnected, right?
Hey, that's a theme for a lot of the companies we've visited in Montana, is like facilitating connection to the outdoors. Like, it's great. Like, at best, you fade away and you have this experience outside.
Yeah, absolutely. Outdoor recreation's like the second biggest industry in Montana. So it's production agriculture is number one. So we get to work in the number one and number two businesses.
Love it.
Yeah. But yeah, so landtrust.com, we have a phone number. If folks are interested, like, we're a service-oriented business. You call us, we'll answer the phone. You can text us, whatever.
Love it.
Yeah.
That's super
good. We're not like a faceless, nameless, you know, go through a robotic answering machine service. Like, no, we'll talk to you. We're all based here.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks again, Nick.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having.
All right.